a mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Amid, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Well, what have we here?
It's a podcast.
Fine.
And what excitement we have today.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara and Rob Spiewak. And now, here's Rob.
Settle down, everybody. This is not an episode of Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. It is, it's just
COVID
another...
COVID strikes again.
It's just another jar. Josh and Rob Show. And a special one where we're going to go sort of behind the scenes on the podcast and how Josh and I prepare on a daily basis. And also, I want to talk about what sort of got you started in your line of work. Because, you know, you've been at this forever. And I can explain my backstory, which is boring, but hey, we've got time to fill, so that's good. The first thing, though, the most important thing, I was dying not to text you last night, but I wanted to surprise you today. On Netflix, there is a new Hallmark quality movie that I sat through last night.
I've seen the covers. I have not sat through them yet. There's two. It looks like the first two Hallmark quality movies.
The one I watched last night, and I said, I bet a dollar Josh is watching this right now, is called The Wrong Paris. Have you seen an ad for this?
Yes, where they go to Paris, Texas. Similar to those girls that went to Africa.
But perhaps the most fascinating part of it is that the romantic lead is played by iCarly, Miranda Cosgrove, who is now 68 years old. Well, yeah, your kids aged out of that. But iCarly was perfect landing stop for my kids growing up. So it got to a point where there were actual nights that Carrie and I just decided that iCarly is the best thing on television. And we watched it because it was a good sitcom.
I had a show like that called Good Luck Charlie.
I remember that show.
Very similar. My kids, first rise age for my kids, when they were watching that and Hannah Montana, and Good Luck Charlie is the one that I'd be like, this is a family show. I can sit and watch this one.
I mean, this is also before that Dan Schneider was revealed to be as creepy as he was. And I see some of the
was
producer.
Was he involved in iCarly?
Yeah, he was. He was the executive producer.
Oh, not Dan Schneider.
Oh, no. Well, that's Schneider. Another creep. Yeah. Schneider.
Schneider. I'm following the wrong creep.
Yeah. Schneider is still on his big yacht. But there are some, in retrospect, weird things to see on iCarly, but it doesn't change the fact that it's a well-written show. And I'll stand by the fact that Miranda Cosgrove is a very talented comedic actress, like almost like a Lucille Ball type. She can carry sort of a plot like that.
Well, I'll tell you, The Wrong Paris is on our list. We did mark it to watch.
Good.
Kelly was away this weekend, or we would have knocked it out.
Carrie was very excited to text me the new iCarly project yesterday, and I said, oh, we'll watch it. The thing that really flipped me on it is that it is about a dating show, no surprise there, called The Honey Pot. That's what tricks her to going into Paris, Texas. And The Honey Pot is The Bachelor, essentially, right?
Right.
And they make the movie, they tell the story, and they have all the makings of a real movie, but it feels, when they do the reality show stuff, it feels so much like a real reality show. The way it's shot and the stupid challenges and all the different types of girls, it's pretty nutty. I think you'll like it. I liked it a lot.
All right. I'll take a look.
But only at the Hallmark level, you know.
It's the season for Hallmark movies.
Exactly.
Almost.
Yeah.
They're jumping in. They're trying to get these out a little early. But were these Christmas themed?
No, this is just Hallmark-y? This is just a Hallmarky themed movie. But you know the reason that it's separate. It's a little too clever to be a Hallmark movie. Because if it was a Hallmark movie, she just would have met the bachelor guy,
right?
Hated him, then dated, then married. But there's a whole path getting up to it.
Why are there not? It's a blind spot on these Hallmark movies for me. Why are they not centered around other holidays? You know, like you go home for Halloween. And well, you fall in love with the guy and you don't know it's him because he's got the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Got the mask on. I think that Gary Marshall tried holiday theme movies for a while. He did New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day and he did all. I guess Christmas is the most marketable. Maybe that's why they're all Christmassy. I've seen, I think, a couple Halloween-ish ones.
Now that we've got Netflix, it's time for, I want to see, there's probably some Thanksgiving ones in there, but they market it more as going back to meet the family and Christmas creeps in.
How about this girl, this lady, she's a hard at work publisher in New York City who focuses so much on work that she ignores everything around her. And it's summertime and she realized she has no boyfriend. So she goes home to Vermont. Okay. She goes home to Vermont and she goes to the family, the big town fireworks display. And the guy that's lighting off the fireworks blows his face off. And she doesn't know who he is, but she's in love with him because they've been on some sort of app. And she sees him and she sees beyond, you know, the blown off face. There's your 4th of July Hallmark movie.
That's good. See, I was thinking, you know, I was going down the same path, New York City banker, a high up financial advisor type guy.
Right.
And suddenly they're both like super busy at their jobs, but suddenly they have MLK Day off because it's a bank holiday and they just happen to meet each other in the park.
How about this?
They too busy for love.
They show up to work by accident on MLK Day. And they're locked out. Or maybe they get locked in because they're working overnight.
That works too.
That's right. And saved by a kindly janitor. Yeah, that would be. So MLK will be your first holiday movie that you make for Hallmark?
Yes. Okay. And then I'll make one that kind of a period place piece, which will take place during Y2K, where they're both waiting for the computers to fail.
I hate that would be a period piece now, but it would. It that absolutely would. And then I'll work on Arbor Day tomorrow. Something to do with trees.
You know, we completely went off the rails as soon as the show started. We haven't mentioned Mike is fine. He'll just be back tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. He's not here, is he?
Not yet.
Okay. Also, you, speaking of podcasts, which we're doing right now, you had a podcast interview last night. Did you conduct it or were you the guest?
No, the guest.
Okay.
So because I do like this Orioles podcast, I get reached out pretty regularly saying, hey, will you come on my sports show in L.A. and tell me about the Orioles or whatever?
Well, you're sort of a mover and shaker in the alternate baseball coverage because you have so many followers on TikTok.
I do.
And you've got the finger on you are the ultimate fan. So you're able to speak out and represent the fan base, I think.
And I'm easy to get a hold of. I have a flexible schedule. And really, I just don't tell people no. Because I know people helped me out when I started with podcasting.
There's really not much to be gained by saying no.
I had guests the first year of my podcast that I look back and go, why didn't you guys say no? Like, Jim Palmer should have been one of my first 25 guests.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Jim, come on, try harder.
Well, it was podcasting was still kind of new.
It's young, I agree.
And there wasn't competition of everyone has an Orioles podcast. So you could trickle people into being like, well, it's media.
I bet now if you went and searched, you would find like not just Oriole. I bet you could find 3 Jim Palmer podcasts that are just based on him because it's so niche that you know, now you'd have to go through those layers, right?
That's our next spinoff.
The Jim Palmer Show?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Stay tuned for season 1, just his underwear modeling.
How about he is an underwear model who goes home to his home in Maine during Memorial Day. And this lady that's there, she's hardworking. She owns a candle and chocolate and muffin shop. And she doesn't know he's a baseball player.
But what if he meets a really old guy out at the tomato garden? Short old man.
Yeah, well, that will be part of it. That's the tomato garden guy guides him towards this girl in the candle and muffin and chocolate shop. We really could write a Hallmark movie in less time than it takes to watch
No problem.
Yeah, easy, easy, easy. So you are on a sports podcast. I'm derailed today.
So I got a request a couple weeks, last week probably, saying, and it's always the same. It's, hey, I love what you're doing at 336. These TikToks are really great. Blah, blah, blah. Will you come on my podcast? And I'm like, and they sent me, and it's Sideliner Sports or something like that.
Okay.
I never heard of it.
Right. Well, who's heard of every sports podcast? There's 8 billion of them.
Yeah. And I don't care. There are some national sports podcast. The Twitter has a decent amount of followers. And I'm just like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I'm scheduled for 9:40
p.m.
because they're a West Coast show.
So it's like, yeah, dinner time for them, bedtime for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I hop on at 9:40, and behind the scenes, it's on Riverside. And we'll go through that stuff later.
Okay.
And talk about the difference of those things. But it's on Riverside. So I'm sitting backstage, and I'm watching the show and just waiting, working on other things. And they're talking football, and they keep teasing a segment is coming up with a fan. And I'm like, is that? I text Kelly, and I was like, is this me?
Do you think when you first hear it, like, oh boy, I'm going to enjoy this segment with a fan because I like hearing the thing, and then it starts to sink in that it's you?
Oh, when I first hear it, I'm like, it's 9:40. Like, they're already behind schedule. Like,
right.
That must be after me.
Okay, sure.
And then it's 9:55, and they're still talking, wrapping up football talk, and they're like talking about this fan segment coming up later in the show. And this is where I'm like, well, I've been sitting backstage now for 15 minutes.
Right.
I don't know these guys. They asked me to come on this show.
How is there, like, before we get to it, I just have to know, you're obviously monitoring it as you're in the waiting room.
It's fine.
Are they like woo-woo-woo jocks, or are they more analytical jocks, or what is the tone of their podcast?
Know-it-alls.
Okay. I get you. All right. Good.
Yeah. We don't just know our team. We know every team,
of course.
Yeah. They are young guys in their I don't know, probably mid-20s.
Oh, they're brash.
So they're like, yeah, you know, they're that college age.
Yeah, no one can tell them anything.
They've got to be the next Barstool.
They've got it all figured out. Good for them.
Right.
I used to be that smart.
Exactly. So anyway, so then we go. So then I'm like, well, by 10 o'clock, I'm just shutting this thing down. If they make me wait 20 minutes, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want to go to bed. I did have a soul gummy that did help me stay there a little bit longer.
I understand. Well, you have to wait for that. That puts you in the 336 zone, is the gummy.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
No. Normally for 336, do not do that because I'll forget all the stats.
Okay. But as a guest, you're fine.
As a guest, in fact, I kind of forgot about it. When I took the gummy earlier in the day, I forgot I had this thing.
I've done that.
So
it's not good.
No, it's not good. I'm like, I have all these stats pulled up on my other monitor because I'm like, I could just lose my place with this gummy. Mm-hmm. So I have it all written down, ready to go. So then 9:56, 9:57.
So a full quarter hour after you were booked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They bring me into the show and they introduce, today online we got a fan and he's a big fan of the Baltimore Orioles. So now they're introducing me as I am a fan of their podcast. And my favorite team is the Baltimore Orioles.
Well, they're half right. You do enjoy the Orioles.
So then I'm like, that's when it strikes me that, oh, I am the fan.
You are the fan. You are the fan. Exactly.
And not just a fan of the Orioles to come on here and talk about how the team frustrates me. I am a fan of their podcast.
That's, you know, we've booked.
That I've never heard of.
We've booked 8 billion guests on the show through the years. And we've gotten more selective, true. But one of the coolest things is that anyone of any import that has done research about the show when they go into it, so they can pretend they're fans. I never expect them to have even heard of the show. But if they at least, you know, a good example is the guy who did the cancer scam interview with us. He came in and he knew something about all of us.
Yes.
When he came in, and that, you know, although it didn't really benefit the interview, it put everyone, I think, like a little at ease. And you brought it some common ground. So, but they're thrusting upon you that you understand this podcast.
No, they're not. They're setting it up as, and I'll tell you the way they close it is, if you want to be next week's fan, send us a message.
Oh, so it's like a talking head segment.
Yeah, they're setting it up like I reached out to them and said, hey, I love your podcast. I want to come on and talk Orioles.
Oh my God. You know, that would have been so great if you came on and said that. I'm so pleased that you let me come on. I'm so glad that you honored my request to join you.
I was so thrown off because, and you know, the gummy's working. So my head's going in a different direction than what's coming out my mouth.
Exactly.
So they asked me to stay the Orioles. That's easy for me to talk about. So I just started going through the players and positions and how we're set up. And I'm rambling about how, like, the team is good right now. And they're like, but you guys suck. And I'm like, telling them why we're playing much better right now, and how, why we're going to screw the Yankees over the next 10 days and
So for you, people that have never taken a Sol gummy, which is just a gift from above. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
But when you take one, it's like having maybe 2.5 beers once they kick in.
Yeah.
And so you get into, I imagine with the amount of love you have for baseball, you can almost go into autopilot on an open question like that, right?
Exactly. Completely autopilot. And the way that it works with this whole gummy, for me at least, is my brain can go in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the difference between the Sol gummy and the two beers is whatever is I'm still in full control.
Yeah, yeah. You don't lose motor skills or anything.
No, it's like I get more creative or something in my
The one thing it'll get me if I do, as we've discussed on this show previously, the 15, I will pick up my phone to Google something and I'll be typing and I'll forget what I'm Googling. And I'll just say, I've got to almost like go backwards in my day to figure out how I got there.
Yes.
So I imagine that you could you're more likely to forget your direction maybe.
So I'm rambling on about the Orioles and hoping they don't ask me about other teams.
Right.
And so I'm just rambling on and in my head I'm processing that I have been totally screwed and set up as a fan of this show.
But I know that you're a notable guy. You have your podcast. You have your following. You do love the game.
Yeah,
when you realize it, are you mad or does the gummy take the edge off the anger of the fact that you were set up essentially?
Oh, it's definitely a little of both. It's a little of I can't believe that they tricked me into this.
Yeah,
It's thinking I guess I need to check out these podcasts that invite me.
Yeah, never heard.
And it's also like. There's something hilarious about it.
Yeah, there is. It is, absolutely. They hoodwinked you, yeah.
It makes me want to start booking guests and then introing them as
a fan.
Today on the show, we've got Stephen A. Smith. He's a great fan of the Mike O'Mara Show. Stephen, tell us about yourself and what you do.
That would be so good. I would
just
love
to throw people off.
Because by the time you get people, and there's some right now that are just, I've been corresponding with people that are on media tours.
Yes.
And that means that for the next 2 weeks or whatever, 6 or 7 times a day, they're going to do the same 8 minutes again. So if you can throw them anything that's off balance, it'll definitely put them on the back on their heels.
We're going to go to caller 10 today.
That's right. Congratulations, Stephen A. Smith. You've won a TMOS panini maker, and we'll have you stay on the line.
Exactly. So I answer all their Oriole questions, and they want to talk about the managerial stuff, and I send them
some. Do you feel you're doing a good job? At this point,
I've taken the show over.
Okay, good. I love that. Yeah.
Because I can talk sports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they don't expect that from a listener segment that they tricked me into.
Yeah, your money metal fan segment.
So I take over the hit and we're wrapping up and they're like, all right, well, thanks for joining us. Thank you for listening to the show. And we'll talk to you later. And I say, well, hold on. I said, can I say one more thing? They're like, yeah. So then this is where the plugs get in.
Yeah,
and I go, all right, well, I would love it if people are a fan of the Orioles, if they check out Section 336. I said, it's the oldest Orioles podcast out there. I've been doing it for over 12 years. And they're like, they make some comment about how 12 years is a long time. And I'm like, well, if you don't like the Orioles, listen to this comedy podcast that I'm on, the Mike O'Mara Show, every day. It's been going on for 16 years. And they're like, 16 years? They're like, we've been at this for 4 weeks.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They shouldn't admit that, even if it is true.
No, never admit that. But then that, once they said 4 weeks, they said 4 weeks, and then they closed the little window on me.
Sure, sure.
So I got booted, and it was the perfect way to end, because I just sat in my chair laughing.
God, that is great. And I think that we did a thing once back in the days of the Don and Mike Show when we would go to – I think this was at the Super Bowl, the big game, Josh. They called the big game.
Yes.
And they would, when we started, Radio Row and wherever they had the Super Bowl was something tiny, like maybe 10 tables in a row of disc jockeys that would go down and do their show. And it was even less populated in the afternoon, and we were an afternoon show. Well, by the time that the Super Bowl was really coming into its own, there was this huge, almost like a ballroom, filled to the gills with radio shows.
Yeah, and I've seen it on TV.
Yeah, and if a guest came in of any consequence, they became the most important thing in the world that they be on the show. And if you're looking at literally 70, 80 radio stations, it's hard to separate yourself and get the guest right. in. So,
and that's when you'd have to like yank him out of the hall.
Sometimes. Right? Now we did have an in back then with Rudy Martsky because he knew everybody, okay. and he could escort them to our table and escort them out. But the problem is that the guests became really reticent to come into Radio Row because even if they were just going to do one interview, they were going to be pulled in every direction trying to get
everyone
out.
Everyone wants them. That makes sense.
So our angle was, I believe this was my idea. It's not so brilliant that I'm going to claim total ownership, but as we finished interviews with people, and here's the quality of star we were getting, like Jesse James, the not the gunfighter, but the motorcycle guy.
Yeah, the motorcycle guy.
He was dating Sandra Bullock at the time, so he was a hot deal.
Okay.
But we'd finish an interview with, say, a Jesse James and say, thank you for coming on. How would you like us to make out your autograph photo? And we'd make them sit there while Don and Mike would autograph a photo and give it to them.
And now they got to walk away. Yeah, and they got to at least carry it until they get to the trash can.
Exactly. Until they're out of Radio Row, they have to hold it 8x10 the show.
They should have then sent you to the nearest trash can at the end of the day to see how many you could pull out.
Yeah, we probably could have recycled quite a few of them. But yeah, so I love the fact that you sort of took the upper hand there and that you showed them that, you know, and they're so proud they've been on 4 weeks. I mean, they're probably, their attitude was, well, they said this wouldn't last.
Hey, and good for them. And we'll get to that when we talk behind the scenes and stuff, because that is always my number one thing for podcasts is if you want to just do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Don't worry about equipment. Don't worry about whatever. Just do it.
Yeah. I mean, for example, you know, we just launched Hicks, Nick, Sticks, Picks. That was a fever dream that was posted in like 9 days from the idea of having it to putting it on YouTube. That's how fast it came around. And you really, it was explained to me by a college professor about the future of broadcasting. They said you used to have a $2 million tower. And land to maintain and federal laws to get this out to maybe 100,000 people. Now, if you buy a $50 modem, you've got the entire world at your feet. Yeah. So you just have to go and go. It's not like it used to be. And that is a good way to start our special topic.
Yeah. I mean, you can get a microphone now at Five Below that sounds decent.
Decent. Yeah. I always go crazy when you see these social media guys that have the lavalier mics, the cheap little lavalier mics, and they're holding them like they're Dick Clark. And I just want to tell them, just pin it on your shirt. You're going to be okay. But the sound quality has changed. All the equipment has gotten smaller and more effective and cheaper.
Yeah.
I think
we've talked before about how that irritates me, but it's good.
Yeah. It is good and it is bad because, you know, there's so many people. So we're going to now start the part of our show that is the special portion, which is the behind the scenes of podcasting. And I look forward, this was Josh's idea, and I look forward to it because we don't often come in and tell you how we make the donuts. And there's no grand science to it, but we can tell you what we do to do the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a secret.
No,
we're not
it's really
how
not.
To do this. We want more people to do this. I've gotten more requests. I've gotten more requests this week over at the Podcaster's Warehouse with a few people about podcasting questions. So I thought, it'd be good to just make something.
Did one of them say, Dear PW, and that's Podcaster's Warehouse. Dear PW, we've been on the air for 4 weeks. I have a question about booking guests.
No.
Okay, good. I'm glad
there are some pricing on my website to scare people away.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, that website is
thepodcasterswarehouse.com.
The Ohio State. The Podcasters Warehouse.
Yes.
Okay, good. So check that out, folks.
But the pricing's all fake.
It is.
Every you know how it goes in this industry. Everyone wants something different, so it's always custom pricing.
Yeah, exactly. So, and there's different levels that you can assist people with.
But do check it out. Prices on there if we have no relation.
Now, because I want to ask you to start. I mean, we'll get to everything, but I don't know. And I've known you now for a year and a half. I don't know how you got into what you do, as you know, audio engineer, video engineer, editing. Great at it. How did that begin, and when did it begin?
It began a long, long time ago. It began as I went to college. Didn't know what I wanted.
Right.
Went away to college for a year, still didn't know what I wanted, came home to do the community college. And then while I was doing the community college, the classes were fine, but still not what I wanted.
Right.
And at the same time, I started working with a band. And I started working with a band and doing booking shows for
is
the band.
Is this
in
Baltimore or Annapolis that you were doing this?
Yeah, this is in Annapolis.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like, we were booking side by side with Good Charlotte. He's a huge band now.
Yeah, very
But
big,
like,
yeah.
I knew those guys and all back then. And it was funny. Back then, we all worked at Annapolis Mall. And we were all doing the same thing. Where we go in, we would go down to whatever the bookstore was called at the time.
B. Dalton, Walden, something like that. Yeah,
exactly. But we'd go over to the magazines, grab the roadie tour book, they'd call it, and they'd come out every year, and it's got all your bar venues, where to send your demos, and then we would take it back to whatever kiosk we were at.
Where did you work at the mall?
I worked at the Sunglass Hut, which also was co-owned by the watch station to sell watches. So sometimes I'd have to go down to the watch.
Now that's where Mike was working, right? At the watch station back then?
Right. Yeah. And the boys from Good Charlotte were at Bubbles, the hair salon.
I know Bubbles well. That, you know, really what you were living is like a John Hughes movie. This is like
really
not as Fast Times at the mall. Yeah.
No, it was late 90s and it was like that type of situation where it's like looking back and it's like, oh, those guys actually did become rock stars.
Yeah.
Well, married celebrities. And
so
they
funny.
Were shampoo boys at Bubbles the same time I was there.
They got the celebrity dates because of they hooked them up with shampoo. That's
well,
the deal.
Have you seen Cameron Diaz's hair and Nicole Richie's hair?
Beautiful. Perfect. And that's what you get for dating, as you call, a shampoo boy.
That was their job.
I don't know.
Did they do hair?
I guess, right. But I mean, it seems to me like calling them like a suds jockey or something like that. Shampoo boy.
No, it's a shampoo boy.
Okay. Now, but you were telling people.
Remember, this was late 90s. So they probably changed that name since.
There's still a Bubbles here in Leesburg. I have to go in and
no,
find
no.
Out.
I mean, the title shampoo boy.
Oh, the shampoo boy. Yeah.
So
me
we would all
sexy,
sit there.
Yeah.
And when we're not dealing with customers, we were calling all these venues and we'd talk and find the best ones and stuff, and then doing local shows. And through that, I started doing audio engineering.
So
and that's
when you
where
were
really
when you were
that.
Getting the bookings, what was your main involvement? Just like a management liaison for the band and the venue.
I did management and then all the audio engineering stuff for the band.
And no better way to learn audio engineering than to go into a dive club and deal with the equipment.
Yeah, it's dive clubs, and it was a Christian band, so it was a lot of churches.
Mm-hmm.
So churches have nice sound systems, and they let anyone run them.
I was going to say, because they're not dealing with spilled beer and cigarettes in most churches, so the audio equipment is probably in better shape. So you mostly learned on the job.
So because I love that, I then went to school for audio engineering.
Well, where did you go?
And I went to the Omega Studios School for Recording Arts in beautiful Rockville.
Okay. Are they still there or do you know?
No, they are there. That is where I believe their big claim to fame was Two Live Crew and a few others. Like, they had some good artists come through.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean,
and that was, that was working on the big analog boards. It was
Two Live Crew at that time. They were working at Mrs. Fields Cookies, right?
They had a brand new board that just came in with this new technology called flying faders.
What is flying faders?
Was presets for your faders, so you could set them all, store them.
Oh, and then they move on their own.
And then they move on their own while you're going on.
That is not
as silly as it sounds. It was game changing.
It was game changing, and it's also the most impressive thing you can show a non-radio, non-media person.
Yes.
When you can bring them into a studio. And if you do that button and you do the preset, they always, their mouth is agape. They think it's the greatest thing in the world.
It's like a player piano.
Yep, it is. It's so
where
true.
A player piano, everyone's impressed. Modern player pianos, the keys don't really do anything.
No, they don't. But it is. I do love those flying faders. They've actually simplified it now. For example, the boards that we use, they have 8 billion presets. Where it won't move the faders, but it will remember all your equalization, the settings like that. Stuff like that is so key, because when you work at a radio station, DJs love to mess with things. They'll say, well, if I do this, if I flip this switch, is it going to make my voice sound lower? Well, it might.
But you also sound like this now, because you've changed the proximity of your microphone.
So I remember that they had actually switch plates that they would put on the back of the microphones at WJFK so no one could touch the switches without taking out four Phillips head screws.
I've installed so many of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
you
great.
Have to.
You have to keep them consistent,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so I went to school for audio engineering, and then that got me a job designing and installing sound systems, and things just progressed. And then I got into podcasting because Oscar needed help. So they got
fired.
So
did he know you as just as like an audio guy, and then that was the first podcast you worked on?
So when Big O and Dukes and the Mike O'Mara show were on the radio still.
Right.
I made an iPhone app for Big O and Dukes and then transitioned that to an iPhone app for the Mike O'Mara show.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. So when you guys first launched as a podcast, I made the app.
So you've been with us forever.
I've been on the outside forever.
Yeah. It's kind of creepy.
So,
yeah.
So Oscar knew me because of that and because Oscar does what Oscar does. And once he finds a skill with someone, he gloms on, and if you're good, you both make some money off of it. So that's what we did.
You're his guy. He's got a guy.
iPhone apps were new at the time, mm-hmm. So he went to all his favorite nightclubs and said, you need an app. And then he'd come to me, and he'd take half the money. I'd take half the money, and I'd make a stupid app for them.
And by the time you had done the first app, I imagine, like, if you custom made an app for a nightclub, and then you sell it to another nightclub, it's probably pretty easy to repackage it once the initial stuff is put together. Smart.
But then Oscar got complicated. Because
tell me about it.
Because he went to the NFLPA. And the NFLPA, this is right when the NFL strike is happening.
Okay.
And at the same time, there's this new thing called Twitter out there.
Uh-huh.
And players are starting to use it, but the NFLPA wants to control all that. They want to control the narrative.
It's classic NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we get a deal. Oscar sells this idea of Twitter, of the NFL Twitter.
So like they'd own their own Twitter?
And it's your own Twitter. All your own players are on it.
Okay.
But here's the deal. Players don't want to do that.
They want to be part of the big scheme, right?
What we have to do is strip everything from Twitter, put it in the app and keep a running list of all the NFL players and update the list. So if you go to this app, you can see all the NFL players, you can respond, but you're really just interacting on a filtered Twitter.
Oh, so
it's all built on Twitter, but it's limited to just all you see is the NFL.
It's like
players.
It's like a barnacle app. It's
a barnacle app.
Oh my God. I had no idea all this was going on.
But, and you know what? It's not even the stupidest app I've made through Oscar. We can get to that one in a minute. This is not where today's show was supposed to go, but I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, this is fun. I'm loving it.
This is good. So anyway, we sell that to the NFLPA. They're very happy with it. We both make good money. I take my check and I go buy a Vespa cash with my NFLPA money, which is the best decision I could ever do.
That's so great. What color?
Red.
Okay, very nice. Yeah.
It was wonderful. Yeah. I would drive it every day almost when I lived in Maryland.
That's why you ended up in Italy this past summer. Because you love your Vespa.
When I moved to Florida, I sold it.
Oh.
And about 2 years ago, the guy reached out to me because he needed some question with the title or something.
Right.
Because he had just moved to Jacksonville. And I said, that's weird. I said, if you ever decide to get rid of this, call me because I want it back.
Oh, that is so cool.
But I haven't heard yet.
That is really neat that you're... I mean, I guess we've all fallen into some money and you've just gone and spent it right away, but that's a valid thing to spend it
on.
That's cool.
That was one where it's like I had looked at him for years and I was at the same time I was working at a church, which was like a mile away, and it was the perfect commuter vehicle for that.
Sure.
So it just all lined up and it was awesome.
That's very cool. I had no idea. I love that.
But let me tell you about the stupidest app.
Well, before, I just got to know, is the Barnacle NFL app, that's no longer in existence, I have to imagine.
No, it burned out after about a year because Twitter blocked things, and then the NFLPA said, oh, well, Twitter's fine.
Yeah, I mean, notion that it would that anyone could think that that would be okay is, I mean, I'm glad you did it. I'm glad you got your check. But it is a little bit of a parasitic relationship. Yeah.
I was very clear that it's like, I don't think this is a good idea, but if you guys want it, we'll do it.
That's right. Okay.
And the next app even bigger, I kept saying, this doesn't make any sense as an app.
Okay, what was it?
All right. It was, I forget what it was called.
Okay.
I would have looked it up ahead of time. It was, this is a time where texting and driving was suddenly a big issue.
Right, right. I remember when it came around, yeah.
So people were trying to figure out how to fix that, and Do Not Disturb did not exist on your phone at the time.
Yeah, I remember I actually went to Todd Moore with an idea about Do Not Disturb for the iPhone, and he said, no, it'll never work. And it came out on the next update. But anyway, just I had the idea of, I said, you really, this would be really easy to do.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, it was probably, it wouldn't work as in, they didn't allow coders to that part of the phone.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's still my idea.
Would be my guess. It's a great idea.
Thank you.
So let's see. This was around 2010.
Okay.
I think, because I was just looking, because Oprah is doing a no texting campaign at the time.
Okay.
I love the company
you're running with. I mean, it's the NFL Players Association. It's Oprah Winfrey. It's not like you're starting at the bottom and working up. You're there.
No, come on. This is all through Oscar. This is how Oscar rolls. You know that.
Okay. All right.
You've been around. I was trying to find it with a quick Google search, because what I remember is it got featured by Oprah Winfrey.
You're kidding.
Not created by Oprah, but it was in Oprah's magazine and featured and recommended by Oprah.
You get an app. How did it work?
That's the embarrassing part about how bad it was.
Okay.
Here's how it worked.
All right.
Remember, there was no Do Not Disturb back then.
Exactly.
So what you did is you went in there and you created groups and you said, here's my family. Here's my employees.
Uh-huh.
This was created by a guy hired me to create this.
All right.
Because he had a bunch of employees and they would keep bugging him while he was driving.
Okay.
So you would make your groups, family, employees, VIPs.
Yeah.
You put all those in. Then when you get in your car, you open up the app and you press Do Not Disturb, and then you choose who you want to not disturb you. So you would choose Do Not Disturb Me families, Do Not Disturb Me employees.
Right. But now, VIPs can still get through because they're very important.
Well, wait.
No?
Remember, there's no way to block people from coming in at this time. Do Not Disturb did not exist.
Right.
Your phones would not allow this to happen.
Okay.
So here's how the app worked.
Yes.
When you hit family.
Yeah.
When you hit employees. When you then hit Do Not Disturb, I'm driving.
Uh-huh.
It sends all those people a text message saying, Do Not Disturb Me, I'm driving. Then when you get there, you press I'm here, and they all get a text saying, you can talk to me again. It's the worst app ever.
I marvel. It's funny. It's just funny to me.
I argued through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I know Oprah featured this because of what the app was called and the concept without actually trying it.
Well, no, she doesn't drive a lot, I don't think. I think Oprah's driven places.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, Oprah is now in possession of one red Vespa that you sold. So good for you. I want to tell you about my sort of heritage in audio. It's not as fascinating as yours, so I'll keep it brief.
This episode brought to you by Prize Picks. You and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you some major buckage. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. It's so much more than just watching the game. You can be a part of the action with Prize Picks. Do you think that Saquon Barkley will have more or less than one rushing TD? Or Joe Burrow more or less than 2.5 passing TDs? What about Josh Allen, more or less than 270 passing yards? Lock it in and get ready for fun. Prize Picks is so easy and so fun. It's the number one way to play daily fantasy sports in over 40 states, including California, Texas, Florida, and Georgia. Deposits? Simple. Venmo, Apple Pay, MasterCard. Withdrawals? Lightning fast, safe, secure. And here's the game changer. Prize Picks invented the Flex Pay. So even if one of your picks doesn't hit, you can still cash out and double your money. Carry Speedway quarterback is killing it already this season. So this season, don't just cheer. Play like you've got skin in the game. Millions of fans already have. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code TMOS to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code TMOS to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. You know, comfort is personal. For me, comfort is crawling into bed at the end of a long day and knowing I'm going to wake up feeling good, not sore, not sweaty, just rested. That's why I love what Avocado Green Mattress is doing. Their eco-organic mattress is their most affordable option. But here's the thing. It doesn't cut corners. It's a hybrid latex mattress with the perfect medium firmness, soft, supportive, and designed to last. You'll feel just as good getting into it as you do getting out of it. And here's something I really appreciate. Avocado owns their own springs, wool, and latex supply, so they pass the savings on to you. That means you get healthier, organic sleep at a surprisingly affordable price without compromise. Plus, it's sustainably made with trusted certifications that prove it's better for you and the planet. That's real peace of mind. So head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and save up to 20% on Avocado certified organic mattresses. Avocado, dream of better.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
But I do also want to tell you about Pesty. Tis the season that bugs start showing up in your house because it's getting colder outside. They want to come in. They want to have a nice winter, too. They want to have a nice Christmas movie with, you know, maybe another bug from a Hallmark movie, and they can get together and learn the true meaning of love. But you don't want those bugs. You want your flies to fly away. Do you want to make your fleas flee? Do you want to take your praying mantis and say amen? That doesn't make sense. But if you've got bugs, you need Pesty. Pesty is a do-it-yourself pet control system, and their kit makes it so easy. It only takes a few minutes to apply. Other pest control companies will charge you $35 a treatment. Other pest control companies will charge you over $800 per year, but Pesty will start you at $35 a treatment. Now, I've done Pesty for years. It takes me about 8 minutes to do my entire house, which is really not bad. It comes with a customized plan based on your location, so the poison and the pesticide is targeted at the bugs in your area. It includes a reusable plastic sprayer, greatest squirt gun ever, a mixing bag, pesticide, gloves, and perfect instructions, easy to follow. You follow them, and you can complete your application around your home in less than 10 minutes. As I said, I did it in 8. Pesty gets rid of over 100 types of bugs, and it is kid and pet friendly. So the same pesticides they're sending you have been used in hospitals and schools all over the country. And best of all, Pesty offers a 100% bug-free guarantee or your money back. Pesty is the bestie. And now is the time to protect your home from bugs with Pesty. Just go to Pesty, P-E-S-T-I-E, Pesty.com for an extra 10% off your order. That's Pesty.com/TMOS for an extra 10% off. And thank you, Pesty. Good stuff. So but before we do me, when did you get into video? Because your video work is great.
You guys, everyone knows that middle school camp I do every June.
Exactly.
And yeah. I believe I've done it 25, 26 years or whatever now.
Good for you.
And,
that's awesome.
When I went there, I was pulled in to do the audio.
Uh-huh.
And they had another guy doing video.
Like live board stuff or capturing audio for the video?
No, live sound.
All right.
And there was a guy that was doing video, and this was back like VHS tapes, and he'd copy it onto the computer and edit. So I was paired with him and I helped him out a little bit. And then like 2 years after doing it with him, he couldn't make it that summer. So they said, can you do it? And I said, yeah, I'm going to have to buy a computer. And they said, okay. So I bought a computer.
Cool.
And then I've been doing it for 25 years.
That's another trial by fire thing. You just went in and did it. I mean, was it tricky? Did you have to figure stuff out?
I mean, yeah, but I
knew the basics, right?
I did enough ahead of time testing it and stuff that I was fine. Mm-hmm. And it was just that weird old time where it was analog, everything. Yeah. But
it's fun when you learn a system like that and you get the rudiments down of how to do it, then you can be creative with it and sort of advance from there and use the stuff for the best uses that it's entitled for. My buddy John, who I did an extra with, his movie was just released in New York, John. Congratulations. He did like a panel with Michael Douglas and everything, and it was a red carpet premiere. So proud of him. But anyway, he laughed one time. We got together after college, and he laughed at me. I said, what? He says, you're doing what you've always done. I said, what do you mean? He says, don't you remember in high school we'd be ready to go out to do something, and you'd say, just a second, I want to play you something, and you'd just one more thing me to death. And that's what you do now, except you do it on the radio. So I've been collecting audio since I was wee and small. And like, I recorded TV shows onto audio cassettes because we didn't have a VCR back then. Then I figured out how to use an audio out from my television into a cassette deck so I could get a pure recording. And it advanced from there. And then VHS became hi-fi VHS, and you could capture stuff that way. But when I came into the world of real broadcasting, I had already been fired. I was about to be fired from my college station because I was a jackass. But I went up and started to work at WJFK, dream come true for me to intern there, and learned the equipment there. I have a broadcasting degree at VCU, but everything they were teaching me, I was learning like 8 months or a year previous because I was at a real radio station. And so when everyone else is fighting with trying to edit tape with a razor blade, I was flying through it already because I was doing it. And because WJFK was ostensibly a DC station, but their license was in Virginia, not a union shop. So anyone could come in and touch the equipment and do anything. And that's where the place got the reputation of being run by interns. Because I was an unpaid intern, and I was putting production on the air, like promos and stuff like that. So that's another bit of sort of trial by fire, because you don't want to screw that up. And so I've collected audio my whole life. As far as running board, I took to it real quick. My dad was an audio guy. I grew up with like a reel-to-reel deck in my house and a equalizer. He had the first Dolby equalization. You had to buy a unit that was the Dolby unit. It wasn't built into anything. So I got to watch him do all this stuff. I still have his record player from when I was a kid. He bought great equipment. And so that sort of inspired me. And then you just start gathering the audio and you go through it. Again, it started with like TV. You could pull stuff from records. CDs was a game changer for audio. But movie clips and stuff used to be really a hassle. You couldn't just go to YouTube. You'd have to rent it and then put it in a VCR and go through the whole thing and then put it to tape and then put it on, God forbid, a cartridge. So I've been through a lot of it, and it's really cool where it is now because everything is so available. I do feel a little like it's replaced a little of the human element because a 50-year collection of audio, you know, is now available to anybody that has a computer. But I remember certain things I found that were like, when I finally found a broken glass sound effect that I like, I was thrilled. It was exciting because I'd looked for it for so long. So, you know, stuff like that I remember.
Yeah, I still have a briefcase out in the garage full of CDs where every CD is in a little sleeve and labeled with an address because I've got a correspondent book. So if I need to find that, like a DJ, need to find the album and find the track, I can find it.
That is so great. That's
so
cool.
I've got all that.
I started music on my computer back when it was something called Music Match, and Music Match became iTunes. So when you bought the original first generation iPod or took one from the prize closet, it doesn't matter how you got it, Josh, but you hooked up.
Oh, it matters because that's why I did not have one because they were like $400.
They were huge. But the corresponding software for the first generation was called Music Match. And that sort of iTunes. Computer people that I know hate iTunes. They say it's a virus because it gets in and organizes and moves all the music. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's really modernized the way You can put together virtual music and you can meta tag stuff. It's
wonderful. Laid the foundation for all the streaming.
Exactly.
Sites.
It did. So that's an awesome thing that it did, because all my other stuff is alphabetized perfectly. You've seen my basement. It's really an OCD nightmare / dream. But the fact that you can search stuff on your computer to bring up music is an absolute game changer, because I was the on-site producer for the Don and Mike show. I had to know where all of those 5,000 tape cartridges were, and I had to find them and grab them. And look, a cartridge, if you don't know, folk, here's one. It looks like an 8-track tape, and it's just a long loop of reel-to-reel tape. But everyone would hold one sound. So every time you heard one element on the Mike O'Mara show or the Don and Mike show, it involved physically grabbing a tape and putting it into a machine. But enough about me.
You reminded me about early radio.
Yeah.
Because I didn't come in early radio, but when I started the app business, it was because it was the right time where no one else was doing it. So to make an app for Big O and Dukes and the Mike O'Mara show, it's because WJFK wasn't protecting their stream. They were just putting it on their website. And there wasn't podcast necessarily, so it was just simulcast,
and there was no way to monetize it. And that always blew my mind, because CBS, that was like a company wide policy. They didn't care.
They didn't know the internet. None of these people knew the internet.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's my very first app was a radio app, because there was a show I wanted to listen to.
Oh, but no,
it
really?
Was such a pain to it was such a pain to pull up on my phone, but they would do. They would broadcast live, and then they would also keep an early podcast feed on their website.
Okay.
So I made an app that could pull all this and play it, and it was Coast to Coast AM.
No kidding.
So I made an unofficial app, not connected, didn't ask permission. So I made this app for them. Yes. Well, not for them. Made it for myself.
For yourself. Yeah, exactly.
It was a selfish app, because I wanted to easily be able to listen to this.
Uh-huh.
So I made it, and I made it where... They were selling their archives at the time.
Okay.
So I made my app so that you have to log in. And the reason I did that is because I had an account. Well, my brother had an account that I would use to log in.
Yes.
So, no, this is all good. So what I did is I then put it up on the App Store, because that's how you got it on your phone.
Okay.
And lots of people started using it. So then I put ads in it. And then I started making like $100-$150 a month.
Wow.
Off this Coast to Coast app.
Because you built something for yourself, but now you have this found money.
Because other people wanted it too, so it's this suddenly found money. So Coast to Coast reaches out to Apple. And wants Apple to shut it down. Apple says, Apple emails me and goes, there's nothing wrong with your app. You didn't use their logos. You're making sure everyone's logging in. It's fine. Can you just put something on there that says you're not affiliated or you're unofficial?
Okay.
So I update the launch screen so it says an unofficial app, and then it shut them up. And for years, I would just make $150 a month off this app that I never updated, never did anything, because it was a selfish move for myself.
I love it, and I love the fact that calling it the unofficial gives you sort of a little bit of a gangster quality. It makes it almost a little bit cooler, right, you know?
Well, that's like with Big O and Dukes. They would always refer to it as the rogue app. We can't talk about it, but we know there's a rogue app out there.
That's so great.
My original business name came off of that, where I called myself Rogue Apps. But
that's
then
fantastic.
Apple says this sounds too much like a virus. You need to change the name. So I had to change the name.
Isn't it great when you really have a genuine problem and you can't get a human being on the line at Apple, but if you call something rogue, they find you.
It was also early days of the iPhone.
Yeah.
So I could get a hold of people.
That's true.
I got a letter from Tim Cook once. Not Tim Cook, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, okay.
I got an email from Steve Jobs once, because back then you could.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's funny the changes I think that we've both seen over the past 20, 30 years from different lenses. But we both sort of came up at about the same time, which is cool. Yeah. But it is not what I don't want to say it's not what I signed up for, because I wanted to be on the radio. It's just evolved. I don't know that I could be on the radio now unless it was something like a KCJJ where it is like a standalone station. Yeah.
You can't. It's control now. Yeah. And I don't know at what point, I guess with Sirius updating, keeping Howard for more years, that's going to lock that in.
Sure.
But at some point, it's, and I think you're seeing it a little with SNL, where SNL is pulling TikTokers into SNL.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see podcasters try to get pulled into radio. And I don't think podcasters can fit into that constraints of radio.
You can't. And it's because radio is at its best when it's local. It's just, that's the way
100%.
It is. And because you can serve a local. And again, I'll bring those letters up again. KCJJ has never been anything but a local station. They serve their area.
And except for us. I mean, we're not local.
Well, no, but we're aware of the locality.
Yes.
And podcasters are built on the notion of worldwide coverage. They couldn't micro-focus onto one area and be successful in radio. The only way I think radio can save itself is to go back to being local.
Section 336 is pretty local.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Sports talk, you can get away with it.
You can get away with it, but know that, you know, baseball is a worldwide thing. Right. I'm sure you've got listeners all around the world.
We do. Yeah. We do. And that's also where I see young kids come out, where I don't care about the download numbers for Section 336.
Mm-hmm.
They're good, but I don't care about being the next Kelce Brothers.
Okay.
So, but younger people want that. So they're not even doing local sports talk. They're doing, we're going to talk everything under the sun.
They launch into it.
Anyone will listen.
Yeah. And yes. It's not the way podcasts can excel is by focusing. And it doesn't have to be local stuff. It's you have to have a niche. Now, I think because of that, as I pivot back to us,
I don't even know if we have time to really do behind the scenes stuff now.
Well,
we can save it for an extra and continue this path.
But this is fine. I like it. But when you hear a podcast that is like an all over the place podcast, it comes with a bit of discomfort because it doesn't seem to work. But I think we're a separate sort of entity because we have our basis, our toes are still in radio. It's still a radio show. I mean, I know it's a podcast, but to me, we approach it like a radio show. That's why we do the breaks in the middle and the pretty much stay on time and sort of a format. Now, we're not locked into it, but these are all things we learned when we were on the radio. So,
sure. 100%. And I know that drives some people crazy.
It does.
Because they're like, oh, well, it's a podcast. Just talk whatever you want. I like the structure. I think the structure is part of the show.
I agree. And I also think, I don't want to get too much into the serious business of comedy, is that you need to have restraints sometimes to make it more condensed, to sort of stay in your lane. If you can go anywhere, you derail, and you want to stay sort of focused.
Yeah, well, like today, we've completely derailed.
Yeah, but we're very focused on what we're talking about.
We are. And the other thing is, if you don't, without those constraints, any of those podcasts without the restraint, the ending of the podcast drives me crazy.
Oh, because there's no way to end it.
The air just would let out of the tire.
Exactly.
And it's like, I guess we're out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see you later.
I think that's one of the reasons that Beautiful Video, the Audio Vault, works well at the end of the show. It didn't used to be the end of the show. It used to be the second to last segment, and news would be last. But I like closing with Beautiful Video because if I can have one thing in my pocket that's worthwhile to end on, then we've got an ending. But in all sorts of entertainment, the ending is the hardest part. So many Saturday Night Live sketches or things like that don't have an ending, they leave you feel, as Orson Welles would say, unrewarding, unfulfilled.
Even Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan is your prime example of there are no constraints.
Yeah.
He will talk for 3 hours, and then it's just like, oh, I got to go somewhere. I'm being told to wrap it up. Or it's the ending is never planned.
Bless his heart, Pete Holmes, who has a podcast called You Made It Uncomfortable, I think, or something to that effect.
Something like that.
And I met the guy, and I was charmed by him. I thought he was very funny, like his stand-up. I put on his podcast, and it's really like a three-hour podcast that diminishes, and then it's done. And it's really, it's wearying to listen to it.
And it's interesting because I used to listen to that podcast.
Okay.
There's a lot of comedians where I listen to their podcast the first year, 2 years of their podcast, because they were still kind of like, well, this is a radio show. I need to be proper. I need to have it planned out. I need to have structure. Then it's, especially with comedians, you see this. Then it's like, well, all these people are listening. We're just having, now I'm having all my friends on.
Right.
It's suddenly unstructured.
I think that was one of my biggest complaints with the Opie and Anthony show. Remember when we started working alongside them at WNEW year 99, maybe 98, there wasn't the feud that would eventually become. And I enjoyed talking to them. They were nice fellas. Their staff was great, but they'd get something like some game. I won't go into details, but it involved a woman, her pants, and a microphone. And they played it for like 4 days straight. And then they'd bring in, you know, whoever's playing in the local comedy club and just let them riff. It was so lazy. And I know they had the skills to do a better show, but that laziness, that sort of, and not to say we're immune from it. We do it too. We sometimes skew out, but you have to have a plan going in.
Well, that show also became their comedian friends coming in and hanging out.
Yeah. And it's a hang is what they used to say. Yeah. And I never cared for that. I don't think you should put that much reliance on your guest, personally. I like having a guest occasionally, but and you want to feature them. But if the guest were to cancel that day, do you have something worthwhile you could say with that? And that's one. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what if the title host cancels on you?
Well, no, it's just a postponement. That's all.
No, I know.
But that's one thing that I am proud about with Mike and I is that we both have the same target in mind just about every day. It might not seem like it, but we do. And if we have like a problem where I need to drop out and reset, or Mike needs to drop out and reset, or we have some audio trouble that we have to, you know, sort of pivot, we can do it because we know where we're at and what we're doing. And it has to do with it sometimes, and this is a behind the scenes thing, something even as simple as having a list of 10 items that we're going to get to today. And that's enough because we all know what's on the plate and we can work from there.
Well, and we do things a little different than a radio show or another podcast where we show warts and all.
Oh yeah.
So when Mike may focus a little too much sometimes on the issues and the tech issues all going on, but we don't edit any of that out because
part of the fabric.
It's like bringing family into the show. We want you to feel like you're here, even if that means Mike fussing with his computer for 10 minutes.
And it's equivalent to what they used to do with the Tonight Show or even Letterman, live to tape. You start that tape and you're going to go. Unless there's crises, we're going to keep going forward. I think we're pretty good at that. I think that's one of the best things about the show.
That's the radio foundation as well.
Yeah, you're right.
You can't sit there and let's redo this segment. No, it just went out to thousands of people.
Program directors take a mighty dim view of that. But also, it's fun. There is definitely an urgency built in to get it right, especially now that we're not only just going live to tape, but we're streaming live. So, I mean, it really is that sort of excitement of doing I still get thrilled every time I turn on the mic because you know that there is a certain unknown factor out there that could be working against you, but you're going to have to get through it. And it's exciting. I think it gives our show a little bit more, I don't know, spark or excitement because we're still doing it live. I like that. So what do you do? What would you say is the first thing you do to prepare for a daily show? Because we both do a lot of prep, but they're very different ways. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a few different things I do. One is I will, when I wake up, sometimes at night, like last night, I immediately came and wrote down on my notepad, and by notepad I mean iPad,
right?
Where I keep like a calendar of every show on my iPad. So I immediately wrote down bad interview
because I knew I wanted to forget about that. Yeah, that's all you need. And I was the story.
I've got show prep.
Right. Perfect.
So, but sometimes I'll have a weekend where, like this past weekend, where nothing happened.
Yeah.
Where I just did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will spend Monday morning like, let me see what's going on the news. Is there any stories out here that I should be prepared for?
I'll do the same thing. And then sometimes it's magical if something sort of falls in your lap. Like, I don't know that anybody could get 25 minutes after opening the Colazol box or the poop sample box that we did on the bonus show.
Yes.
I mean, most people would probably just toss it aside, but we went through it bit by bit and I loved it. It was fun because we were all exploring something we knew about.
Yes. It was perfect because the commercials are like a cartoon. So you never, it's like a singing box on a cartoon. So you, we all know about it, but we've never received the box. So it was perfect.
We didn't know about it. So I thought that was a lot of fun. And it's recognizing content where content is.
Right.
Mike always says one of his favorite segments I've ever done was recapping a concert. And I mean, what is there to say besides, well, I went to a concert last night. Music was good. Band was good. Okay. Here's, you know, here's the latest from Taylor Swift. But he let me go through it song by song. And it was a Ringo Starr concert. And I was way, way into it. And you can, there's juice. There's, I hate to use this phrase, but there's juice in that fruit. If you squeeze it, you're going to get it. It's just a matter of recognizing what you need to do.
Right. Those are the better stories. Like, and so I always write down stories. And if we don't get to it, I copy it to my notes for the next day.
Yeah.
Like I carried all last week. I carried Texas Roadhouse.
Okay.
Because I went to Texas Roadhouse last week, and I was going to ask you how long you sit there to like wait for your food to come. At what point do you get up and leave? Because
that's
true. I had this happen to me where
that
I was
bad,
there 45 minutes.
Wow.
And then I was like, I'm telling Kelly, and then I was like, you know, I was telling Kelly, maybe we should leave. I said, there was that huge crash like 20 minutes ago. Do you think they just dumped our food on the ground?
Oh, like a big cafeteria tray drop. Yeah,
exactly. I was like, do you think that was our meal? And we're sitting there and it's just the two of us. The kids, we don't have the kids that week. So we've got no place to go, but we're hungry. So it's now it's like, well, do we leave and go get dinner someplace else? Or do we just relax? And right then the manager comes up to us and goes, sorry, I know it's been like 40 minutes. You may have heard the crash. That was all your food.
Oh, no. You really got it right.
I've never had that happen before. And she said, but we're going to cover all your bill. Don't pay anything.
Oh, well, that's...
So then it was like, well, now I'll sit here and wait another 20 minutes.
They made good on it. Yeah, I didn't know that. But yeah, there are certain bits that
But
will...
it's a stupid story like that where it could have led to a conversation that I'll just write down.
Well, I mean, you've got two words in your prompt, Texas Roadhouse. But as you tell the story, I've got thousands of questions.
Right.
And
that's how it goes.
And I do feel part of the structure of our show is one of us will try to tell a story and the other two aren't trying to derail, but they're trying to figure out every subtle shading of the story.
Oh, I think you and I pester Mike with that all the time.
Yes.
And it's always to make Mike the bad guy. Not because he's the bad guy.
No.
But we want to throw him off.
Yeah, make him a victim. For this, I know that you would get two sentences into your Roadhouse story before Mike was saying, well, what did you order?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and it comes from knowing each other, too.
Well, it's like yesterday, I brought the story about the 1%, 2% and
milk.
Milk. And I wrote it down, and it's... Because I was like, well, I can go after Rob with this because I know he loves whole milk.
Right.
And it's an RFK thing, and these guys hate RFK, so it'll be fun.
Right.
And then while I'm doing that, I realized, oh, this is immediately going to be derailed to I can't say the word milk.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, but I can't take it away.
But it was so perfect.
It's good show content.
Yeah. And so recognizing, and I think probably if you were to talk to your 4-week veterans in the sports podcast, probably one of the skills they would probably need some honing on would be recognizing what content will work and what won't. Because
and
they can always go to
sport.
Yeah. They can always go to sports, but if they want to have that extra something, they need to know what direction to go. And that's
why,
you know, Mike will have a list of say 10 items. I try to bring 2 or 3 every day. Some of them keep, like the cameo game that we played on the bonus show. That was in the hopper for like 2 weeks. But it's also evergreen. It would be
and
just
that's
as
where
good.
That's where I feel bad for the kids coming up now because they'll never know Hot Talk Radio, Guy Talk Radio, because that's where this all came from.
You're right.
Where my influences was the Don and Mike show and then a lot of Big O and Dukes on WJFK. So that's where I learned like you can take something stupid and spin it for an hour and a half.
And that's sometimes the best stuff.
Be, those would be my favorite segments.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny about, because Hot Talk really grew out of Top 40, because it has sort of a Top 40 or contemporary hit radio feel with the momentum and well-produced and always
trying to keep guys that wanted to talk more and tried to get the music out.
Exactly. And that Mike could tell you the story beautifully, but I'll just thumbnail it for you, is that when he and Don started and they were playing 12 records an hour, and then they got it down to like 7 and then 5 and then 3, and they were having the production director cut out a minute and a half of each record. So they were short records. They would count the theme to Miami Vice as a song.
Right.
And so they were playing less and less. And that talk, that was fun to get to watch that evolution from a Top 40 presentation to a essentially a Hot Talk presentation, but watch it gradually evolve. I loved that.
Well, because the way it gradually evolved was by people like Don and Mike and Howard showing that there was this need for, that there was this desire for this, because their ratings would go up the less music they played.
Exactly.
Which
exactly.
For program directors made no sense whatsoever. So they had to prove it.
Program directors hate everything. They hate everything that works.
Sure.
They do. Oh, no. So I would talk about some news gathering tips and or how we do it when we come back. But do you have a lot of delightful memories? I believe this show proves that we do.
I love Legacy Box.
I do, too. And if you want to relieve those good old If you want to relive those days and you don't know where to start, I can help you. Release the memories. Do it with Legacy Box. Legacy Box is the simple and safe solution for digitizing all your family's precious memories. Plus, when you go to legacybox.com/TMOS, you can enjoy 50% off when you get started with Legacy Box today. Two guys started Legacy Box in their college dorm over a decade ago, and since then, it's grown from a team of two to the largest, most trusted digitizing company in the world. Right now, when you purchase a Legacy Box, you get 90 days free access to the Legacy Box Cloud, which is like Netflix, but for your videos and pictures and stuff. You can stream your videos anywhere. Download, organize, save them, and store them securely. The Legacy Box Cloud brings you peace of mind because you always have a backup. So go to legacybox.com/TMOS and save 50% for a limited time. Just go to legacybox.com/TMOS. That's legacybox.com/TMOS. And remember, wash your hands before eating, Josh. So,
do you have any plans to go to Chattanooga, Tennessee? Because I want to
Not this week.
I want to go visit the Legacy Box home and warehouse.
Oh, I want to go to the dorm room where the two guys are. I don't know if it's still there.
You know the college I went to for 1 year was in Chattanooga.
Really?
Yeah, I could have founded Legacy Box.
You could have. You could have written a record for the Glenn Miller band called the Chattanooga.
But I want to go visit. They have invited us to come see their production house.
Let's go.
Which I want to go. But at the same time, I know that once I get there, the way technology is now, is it's going to be a bunch of guys sitting at computers with like VCRs hooked to their computers.
You could just come to my house and watch me. It would be the same thing. I'm wondering, where is Chattanooga in the state? Because Tennessee is a long, flat state. Do you know?
It is. Yeah, it's on the border of Georgia, Tennessee.
Damn it. Not close to Graceland. I can't make it do.
No.
I'm sorry.
It's not
about
close
that.
To Graceland. We'd have to make a special trip.
Well, you know, it might be worth it. I don't know. Well, if you went to Graceland with me, it would be hell for you. Exactly. It would be absolute hell for you. To someone who said that Robert Redford died in the chat room, no news of that yet. I can't confirm the fact that Robert Redford is dead.
Yeah. And when you put it with a question mark, I don't believe you.
Yeah. It's not definitive. So we talked about gathering some content. I gather audio a lot, as you know. And well, now it's video, but it used to be the audio vault.
But I'm sorry to tell you, Robert Redford did die.
It's not on. It's not on the web.
It is on the New York Times.
Ah, they broke it. Well, that's very sad. You know, one of the movies we're going to do on very soon on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks is a Redford film. So I look forward to
it. The Sting or Butch Cassidy?
Either would work.
The only two I know.
The Sting would be first.
Okay.
But that's sad. I like Robert Redford. You know what about him, Josh? Handsome.
I was just, he's from The Natural. I know him. I've seen The Natural. There we go.
You'll have to excuse the absence of light. So As far as audio, I spend a lot of time scrolling the TikTok and the Instagram because that's where almost everything is now. There's too much.
Now I will send you stuff on. I'll send you stuff on occasion, but then I feel like such a rube sending you sound, sending you video.
No, you shouldn't.
How many listeners just flood you with video saying this would be perfect?
All the time. But you know what? I will never diminish or discourage it because there's going to be that one time, and it's happened, where I get a piece of tape, video or audio, that precedes it going wide by like 36 hours. Okay. And we look like geniuses.
That's true.
I love it.
That's true. If you find it that way where it's fresh.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It's different a little with a podcast because we've got such a long tail.
Right.
And that people, you know, they might hear today's show in 2 weeks and it's not fresh anymore. But the people that listen live, if you can break something, I love it.
If you can find it before Mike has seen it, before it hit his algorithms.
Yes, absolutely.
It's perfect.
Exactly. That's why I never do videos about watches. He always gets them first.
Well, it also doesn't come up.
That's true.
No gambling videos.
But
leave those there.
That's probably the best source for stuff right now. We're blessed because of internet access that if a big news story breaks, I don't need to run a recorder on CNN until they run the actuality, take out the tape, and convert it. You just go and everything's online. And I don't even have like a DVR anymore, which I thought was the biggest game changer in the world when they came out. I even go back to TiVo. I had a TiVo. And,
me too. And which is why I love the scene in Naked Gun where he gets his TiVo, but she plugged it into the internet and it erased everything. It's because it's such a stupid, small joke that most of the audience will not get, but it was perfect.
My DVR broke and it had a movie on it that's out of print for many years, and it was very, it was bad. It was really
I had Oreo games stored on my TiVo because it's like, this will never happen again.
So sad. And my mom is actually saving two specials for me that she says, you need to come over here and watch these so I can delete them. I said, is storage an issue? She says, I don't know. It says 85%. I said, that means you have 85% of storage left. You're fine.
Right.
Hold on to the Jerry Lewis doc. But
no, and thank you, internet, so we don't have to do that anymore.
Exactly.
We can generally find it.
Now, and that's so funny because I think about videos and in DVRs, the old method used to be roll it back, put it on cassette, and then take it to work on an audio cassette.
Right.
And
sure.
And that's the way you transferred audio. Then I was one of the rubes that when Philips came out with the home CD recorder, it was $900, I think, which was a mint back then. But it could record and re-record on rewritable discs. So if I was doing an event covering, like, say the Emmys were just this week, right? And I wanted to pull tape from them. We didn't have a service. It wasn't online. I would just put a CD in there and hit record and then make notes of anything I wanted to pull later. So that was a big step in the right direction, but still not efficient. Then I moved to a digital audio recorder out of my stereo or TV.
Okay.
And that way I can actually transfer stuff digitally if I have to. That's the way I do it mostly. Now I also convert albums and things like that. It's pretty effective since your source is essentially analog anyway. You're not losing anything by carrying it over through an analog
cord. No, and the modern editing apps clean up so much that it's almost like, this now sounds too clean. I like it the way
I remember when I first started using Adobe has a feature that's, I forget exactly what, enhanced speech. And we used to get, you know, stuff that come in the edit that sounded horrible. Like it sounded like they were literally in a submarine when they recorded it. I said, I don't even know how you make it sound this bad. And then you'd run it through this one pass and it sounded like they were in studio with no background noise. People can go on and on about how AI is going to ruin everything. But
I've seen it do amazing
stuff. I mean, audio-wise, it made those last Beatles recordings possible without changing the vocals.
Well,
they were able to filter them and maximize them and, you know, make another
record. It's also the problem is now AI can remake any voice and make you say whatever it wants.
That is frightening.
Especially in a world where it's like everything is trying to manipulate us nowadays. Either side you're on.
Unless I see a byline like CNN or The Post, I almost go by every news story on my feed now because I doubt it.
There's so much fake. And how many movie posters do we have to post of fake sequels to stop? How many do I have to say, block it, and this is fake? They're not making a Twins 2 with Arnold.
Well, I think also you need to keep... Robert Redford won't be making any more movies, so ignore all of those posters.
Right. Anything now is AI Robert Redford.
So this actually came in the mail this week, and I wanted to talk about it. As far as booking guests, it has gotten impossible to book A-line guests because there used to be, you were competing with maybe three networks and a couple TV stations, and now there's 8 billion podcasts.
And every TikToker.
Yeah, that's true. So you have to sort of look right. This is one of the worst. It's a service. It's free. It's the Radio TV Interview Report. And what they do is a lot of things that are adjacent to famous people. But many people just put in here that they want to talk to you, and they publish themselves. For example, how's this for a great headline? This animal doctor can share how chiropractics for chicken can help prevent bird flu.
Rob,
if you doubt me, there's the chicken.
No, I believe you because I've been playing with this idea of just a new podcast where it's just Josh talks to people.
Because
the angle is there are now people out there who, because of self-publishing and everything, everyone's got a stupid book.
Yeah.
And they will now pay you to come on your podcast.
Yeah.
So my thought was I could make this Josh Talks to People podcast and just book whoever wants to pay to come on this podcast, and I will interview you about your chickens.
I think for that podcast to work, there has to be a certain air of disinterest on your part. They can say whatever they want.
Like a Between Two Ferns type situation?
Yeah, or that lady that interviews people when she's laying in her bed. We saw her with Drake
last week. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just sort of a very low key, and then we can know about chicken and chiropractic.
Or who's that comedian, Tenga or something? Tinga something where she interviews people, celebrities that she doesn't know, and her booking agency will set up like a celebrity that everybody in the world knows, but she doesn't, and she has to try to figure out who they are.
Yeah, I love it. I think that would be good because there is amazingly, I think, with the preponderance of podcasts, you can write that phrase down. With the preponderance of podcasts, people are saying, hey, I can be on the radio. And and you're this chicken chiropractor. You say, this is all about it. There's maybe in this monthly thing, maybe one decent interview that we'll jump on it every 6 months or so. You can also, if you want to know about booking, I go through all the publishing websites. Books, authors are easier to book than movie stars. Even if it's
IMDb
a movie
Pro
star.
Is a pain. You get all the access. You get all the contact information. They don't call you back.
Well, they don't have, and I don't fault them. It's that they don't have anything to sell. But if they've got a book, then they're motivated. True. Even a movie star will promote a book. We got to a point where Bill O'Reilly was calling us because every time he put out a book, Killing Lincoln, Killing Washington, whatever, he knew that he'd get 25 minutes with us, and he liked the host. Mike ran out of stuff to talk to Bill O'Reilly about. We had to turn him down. But they really do get hungry for stuff.
Tucker keeps calling. I keep turning him down.
But if you can put him on the other one, Josh Talks to People.
Josh Talks to People. You can tell my podcast names are very straight to the point.
Exactly.
Like Josh and Rob watch movies. It just goes straight to the point.
It is. It's like
forget all these silly names.
The declarative statement at the front of an essay.
But it's also that you're seeing people like Don Lemon, Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson that had huge followings on TV now out doing their own thing, which makes it way harder for us.
It does. It does because they've got the name of record. And I listen to big, powerful pro podcasts, and I marvel at sometimes how bad they sound. Just the actual audio sounds bad. And you would think they would be able to do something better than that. But again, everyone. And then also there's the sort of like the 5 or 6 episode threshold when someone with name recognition says they're going to do a podcast. And then they stop.
Then they run out.
They run out of stuff to say. Yeah. Which is always disappointing.
Which goes back to the beginning of this podcast. Just do it.
Yeah.
If you want a podcast, just do it.
Over 4,000 episodes of this podcast, counting the bonus stuff. And we've never run out of anything to say. which I think is nice.
No, and we didn't get to any of our notes for today.
We didn't. Let's see.
That'll be an extra.
Yeah, we'll encapsulate. Just remember this. Rode, iPad, soundboard for podcast. That's all I have for you.
And Adobe.
Adobe. Oh, Adobe is great. But yeah, that's it. And thank you for joining us. Perfect show, Josh.
It was great.
No, I really did enjoy it. And we will do a bonus where we get... I think if we got too much in the nitty-gritty of equipment, it might be off-putting for people that are just tuning in for conversation. So we will get into the nitty-gritty, and we'll do a bonus in the very near future. Buy the cookbook. Come on now, guys. You can go to MikeOMaraShow.com and see all our merch there. Do we have any beach towels left?
Oh, we've got beach towels, pickleball paddles, and really cool fridge magnet, like beer openers. Bottle openers.
Every time I go there, there's something new. But I think the most important thing, what with the holidays coming up, go ahead and grab yourself the Mike O'Mara Show Family Cookbook. The recipes are being finalized. Really good stuff. The real fruitcake recipe is in there. Jimmy's Wings. And Maddie Masiello's Tiramisu. She wanted to do something with cheese, but she went with tiramisu, bless her heart.
Well, maybe it's a cheese tiramisu.
Well, it has mascarpone cheese in it, so you know what? Everybody's happy. We'll be back tomorrow at 8 a.m. We did roll early today. Thank you for people that found us anyway. We'll be back tomorrow at 8 a.m. Mike will be back, and we look forward to it. Josh, this is a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
It's great.
And let's see. You know what? I did a mistake here. I meant to play this. When you're juggling two iPads, you're juggling two iPads. It can be tricky. All right. So long, everybody. Bye-bye, Josh.
Tip.
Mike O'Mara.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeOMaraShow.com.
I'm over here now.
Mike O'Mara. Radio Entertainment.